I'm Vantag West from TrinityScience.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
Just when you thought it was safe, make that late night booty call.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh.
In the house.
Oh.
There's a kangaroo cake boxing in my pocket.
Oh.
www.drunkendialing.com.
Good night. Say
good night.
Say
good night,
dummy.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa! Pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and follow your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat nose. What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa! Pussycat, you're so thrilling and I'm so willing to care for you. So go and make up your big little pussycat eyes. Pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. And your pussycat eyes. What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa! Pussycat, you're delicious, and when my wishes can all come true, I'll soon be kissing your sweet little pussycat lips. Pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat lips. You and your pussycat eyes. You and your pussycat nose.
This is Jeff Walmsley of MothmanLives.com and co-author of Mothman Facts Behind the Legend, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Ghostly Talk, sticking our nose in the world's business.
What happened to your journalistic responsibility?
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah? And what do you think aliens are?
Why talking about this kind of stuff?
Aliens'
responsibility is usually holding the truth back. I'm trying to bring it back out to people and let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Is it? We are in.
This is the Wolfman. Hey,
it is you. Not. You're ghost.
I've been wanting to do that for like 3 years. Thank you guys. Thank you for letting me get that out of my system.
I'm ready to be Scott L. again.
In case you didn't know, you are Scott L.
Yes, I am. And you're Doug, right?
I am, yes.
And one, two, three, that's Will.
I'm sorry. Here
one,
again.
One, two, three. That's Will. Okay. Who are you again?
I'm Will.
Excellent. This is Ghostly Talk. We're broadcast live on Pioneer Radio Network from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Pioneer's website is, of course, pioneer.rollo, R-O-L-O.net. Our very own website is www.ghostlytalk.com. And we are in the Haunted Basement Studios in Fraser, Michigan, broadcasting live right now. If you're hearing this at any other time other than 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., you're listening to an archive. Or a replay.
Yeah.
So that's just how it goes. When we're live, we are in the chat rooms. If you go to pioneer.rollo.net, there's a text chat link. Go there. You can get in the chat rooms and chat with people. There's also Indiana Ghost Trackers.
They're doing some new like chat pimp thing for us. It's really cool though.
They have a pre show. You know when we do our pre show?
They have like the Ghost and Talk pre show kegger party every week.
That's what it is.
They like go to a parking lot and like tailgate with computers in their trucks.
If you go to Indiana Ghost, I think it's IndianaGhosts.com something. They're linked up on our website.
Yeah,
go in there before the show on Sunday nights. And if you're a member of their website, you can get into their chat room, and you can chat about Ghostly Talk before Ghostly Talk happens.
Yeah, it's really cool. Thanks,
and then
guys.
They do it after, too. So, hi, everyone.
We have some new people that are, like, broadcasting us during the week, too.
Yes,
I'm
going to
throw this out real quick, also.
Then we have to bring Mary on, yeah.
Mary is, she's here.
I know. I can't wait.
We got to, like, bring her out. We do have new friends. We have the Valley Radio in Tennessee.
Yes, hi, Valley Radio.
Hi, Grandma. Tennessee.
Yep.
DJ Brandon, he's broadcasting us.
I wonder if anybody in Adams, Tennessee is listening, because Adams is where Bellwitch was.
So. Totally cool. I'd like to hear that. We also are linked up on SciTalk now. SciTalk.
That's right. Hi, SciTalk, folks.
That's Dirk from SciTalk. Thank you.
Thank you.
New on that. There's a few other things in the works also. We have Salina, California lined up.
Yeah, we're working on that.
It's 106. What's the name?
Oh,
man.
KQRP.
In Cincinnati.
Salida, California.
I had to, sorry.
KQRP, that's a
radio. Salida, California. Yeah.
LPFM station in Salida, California.
Like, hi.
Hi.
Like, hello, California.
No, it's not down in the valley. Hey. It's up near San Francisco. Oakland,
oh, you're right.
Area. Yeah.
Sorry. So, let me try to do this.
Okay.
Again. I'm gonna probably wreck it. Mary's gonna just like, you know, cyber slap me across the head.
But just do it really fast so we get Mary on.
Okay.
We're gonna talk to her.
We have Mary Downey coming on.
Excellent. Right?
Mary Downey is a world-renowned paranormal investigator, author, and psychic sleuth, one of the founders of the Psychic Research Institute in Hamden, Connecticut. She served as the host of the Rare and Unusual radio program, and I put that in quotes, the Rare and Unusual program, on WICC in Bridgeport, Connecticut, producing over 200 shows for the network. So she's done her homework. She's
Excellent.
Done her footwork, too.
She can give us some tips.
Yeah, we're going to get some help here.
Hope so.
In the 1970s, Mary also became involved in the murder case of Penny Serra, a cold case filed for police, which had remained unsolved for 25 years. The case would later be profiled on Court TV, featuring Mary as a psychic detective. In 1976, Mary also was one of the first investigators, along with the Warrens, and Lorraine, to investigate the Amityville Horror House. One of Mary's favorite interests is the study of UFOs, which has...
Turn around, look in the window.
Jesus Christ! Mary, sorry about that. You still there, Mary?
I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. You have to understand. We broadcast from the Haunted Basement Studio in Fraser.
Which is really a basement.
And a cat just walked up to
if
the window.
You're good. I'll show you a real picture of a real close encounter of us.
Well, we just had one.
Yeah, we had a cat walk up to the window and startle me.
We had a cat walk up to the window and just scared the living bejesus out of all of us, I think.
Shades of Men in Black.
Yeah,
oh,
it probably was one.
I wonder.
He was in his cat disguise,
and it was sending, sending the signals back.
I think. What's that?
Was it beaming down to you?
I think it was trying to get in.
Yeah, it was. That it was scratching at the screen, going, "Hey, I want to talk too. Let me in there. I want to get
Ghostly Talk. I want to talk.
Give me the mic, Mary. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Nice. Thanks
for
glad that the Wolfman is back.
Thanks for coming on at such short notice. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
Now, me, myself and you talked before the show, which I had the pleasure of talking with Mary, and we're all in for a treat here, because Mary is a lot of fun. She's very cool, and I'm really happy to have you on here. I'm really excited about this. We kind of talked a little bit about what we wanted to discuss here, just kind of get an idea of what was going on. And we'll get this out of the way. We'll talk about it. Now, you have not seen the new film, am I correct?
No, I haven't seen that movie. I was briefly told about its context, which really upset me, you know.
Okay.
Neither have I read the book nor any of the other movies based on the case. I signed off on each of them when they came to me because I was dealing with victims, and like in a murder case or a missing person case, if there's somebody that's in trouble, you don't charge for pain and suffering. So I have never, ever in the real world ever, you know, made any monies from Amityville Horror.
Okay.
Number one, I wouldn't. You don't sign a contract with the devil.
I really wouldn't want to do that myself. We've been close to it here on Ghostly Talk a couple of times, I think. But we managed to avoid that.
Yes.
So I think we're familiar with that around.
Yes, we are familiar with that.
But, I mean, that's a really interesting thing you're saying, because you don't charge for pain and suffering and something like this. You deal with victims.
You know, I have family and I have children, and that happens to be the most important thing in my life. So, I mean, if a family has been lost somebody, mm-hmm. and they're confused about that loss, and you can help the police in some way, you do it. But you also have to, you know, I'm a very different kind of a person. I dictate that I'm an encyclopedia. I go in and give the information, whatever I can get, give it to the police officers, and then I step back and away. It's not my job to deal with that.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And the same thing with this. Ed and Lorraine were friends. They were on the board of directors of my school. And when they did cases, they would ask me to go out and time walk for them. I would go out and time walk, give them information, and then I kind of stepped back from the cases that we did because that was their gig.
Okay.
They were doing that. I was out teaching, and I was out lecturing, and I had a radio show. I had other things, and I'm kind of a afraid cat. I don't like stuff.
Well, when you say stuff, you mean, I think we discussed this a little bit. You're not, like, into these horror films. You're not into these dramatized
Bambi.
Things.
Bambi.
Finding Nemo is pretty good, too.
Richard Jones' Diary.
And
the Titanic. I mean, I like things like history that's real, factual history. See, one of the things that disturbs me, and this is probably what tease me off the most, is that I know the true story of Amity. I've been there, done that, and hopefully in this lifetime never have to deal with that type of thing again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no interest in horror movies or books. I especially don't like ones where the victims that live the circumstances and events have no control over how they're portrayed. They were taken advantage of, especially in this new movie, because I understand from several friends that George is portrayed as abusive, which is about as far from the man as you could get. You know, I have nothing against movie industry. I love watching movies. I enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, movies are an investment. They're based on the money they earn.
Mm-hmm.
My objection that over 30 years has always been one thing and one thing only, that a movie impacts an entire family like a debt.
Mm-hmm.
And a family's reputation should, by law, include them in what is allowed to be filmed and depicted, especially the kids. These kids were only 9, 6, and 2.
Mm-hmm.
So they grew up in the shadow of the publicity of the books and the movies, each of which started as a fact. And then to everyone's involved surprise, which is why I never signed on, because it wouldn't have surprised me, it became sensationalized, fictionalized, and then became loosely based on true happenings.
Mm-hmm.
The children's memories are clouded, only by the fear that they live, but by the growing up with these... You've been in school. You're young people.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in school where something was involved in your family. You got razzed.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine
yeah.
these kids living with the fact that their name was Lutz?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
So
honesty and principles are extremely important to me, and this movie takes it one step further in an effort to make it different from the last movie, makes the father look like the villain, an example. And this was one thing that really upset me, was that the actor that played George was interviewed on the Regis and Kelly show. And during a clip where purported George was sitting holding Kathy's hand, he was really squeezing it, I guess, hard.
Yeah.
So he made the remark, nice husband, eh?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, and I remember the scene. I just saw the film a couple hours ago, as a matter of fact, Mary.
Oh my God, so weren't you scared?
Well, I've seen enough of them that, you know, nothing really. I mean, I'm a ghost hunter, for God's sake. Nothing really surprises me anymore.
We did
I'm
have
a ghost hunter,
storm.
And nothing. I'm afraid of nothing. Nothing terrifies me. You know what terrifies me?
What's that?
It's when something is depicted, and it scares the bejesus out of me when somebody takes something and makes it something and it's not, and then tries to horrify people with it. That's what upsets me.
Well, that's what we've been doing here for the last hour and 15 minutes since we started the show at 7 o'clock, and we talked about the first half an hour. We talked about the movie. Doug saw it. I saw it myself today, like I said, and we've really been trying to drive this point home that, like, look, okay, it's fantasy. This is total fantasy here, and this is not true. It's a film. If you want to appreciate it for what it is, go right ahead. It's not our job to tell you you can't see.
God bless you. You know, and the actor should remember that he's an actor.
Yeah.
He's taking words off of a script. He doesn't know George. He doesn't know their children. He didn't know Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
He knew nothing about the house. His ignorance is only that. He's never been exposed to the truth.
Yeah.
He's only been exposed to a script that was handed to him and said, now this is the man you're portraying. Do a good job.
Yeah, and it's work. It's work for these people. I mean, I don't know what was going through Ryan. And the gentleman wasn't Ryan Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
who you're talking about, Mary.
I have no idea.
The only reason I know the name now is because we were arguing about who he actually was. That's a whole different story. But I remember the name. Ryan Reynolds, I mean, I don't know what was going through his head when he was doing this film. I don't know what his approach is as far as his acting ability goes, what his how he executes his lines, what he does, how he gets into character. I don't know how he does it.
Well, I don't know how he could have gotten into this particular character. This particular character is fiction.
Well, they're all... Yeah, I mean, the majority of characters...
The unfortunate part about this is that they used a real person's real name.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, yeah.
And that's the thing that scares me
that
more
is
than
scary.
The movie.
That's scary.
Because... They use George Lutz's name and the events that he is connected to forever.
Purported to have happened. Not did happen. Purported to have happened as they viewed it.
Yeah. Right. And it was... Oh, man. this movie, I'm telling you, poor George.
We can throw an example out for the people that still aren't getting it. There's people that may be listening right now or later this week or listening to an archive of this show. If they're not getting it, let me just try to put an example out there for you, okay? And guys, back me up on this, because I know you will.
Okay.
And this includes you too, Mary. Let's just say that 20 years down the road, Doug, myself, and you were estranged. We don't talk anymore. We had a disagreement over royalty rights for Ghostly Talk. Yeah, right. Okay.
Like there are any.
But let's just say that there is a disagreement with royalty rights, and we end up taking the show. We're done. Well, I don't want to deal with that guy anymore. I hate him. And, you know, we just say, okay, look, this isn't working out. We walk away. It's over. 20 years later, somebody, like, finds, like, you know, some, like, whatever the internet will be in 20 years, they find some cyber, like antique archive of, like, our radio show and listen to it and go, this would be a great movie. This would be a great movie to make, right? And they come to us and go, hey, guys, you know, I know you haven't talked in 20 years, and you're dire enemies now, and you've been sending bombs back and forth to your houses and stuff, and, you know, you have gangsters driving by shooting at your house, whatever's going on. But let's try to get this thing together. Let's sit down and talk this over. So we sit down. We bury the hatchet. Doug and Scott are back together again. Ta-da! Right? We sit down, and we start talking this thing over, and we tell them what we went through. Well, we just did a show. We had fun. We investigated places. We talked about interesting films sometimes here and there. We talked about all kinds of crazy stuff, talked about all kinds of interesting, amazing people, right? And that's what we did. That's what we did. Things just didn't work out down the road, and that was over. So thank you, guys. Thanks for coming down. Thanks, you know, have a nice day. Great. Mm-hmm. Have a nice day. And then the film comes out.
And it has, of course, they've totally sensationalized.
Well, for my role, who could we get?
Well, I hope I get as good a body, evidently,
well,
as they
I'm
get
sure
George.
They'll have two very, very well-built, you know,
studs. Yeah.
Hey, you're listening to Ghost.
Sure, and I'm on the phone. Nice going. I'm 73. You couldn't invite me in person.
Yeah, I know.
But they take this film. Let's just say this happens. They take the film and they make it into this big crazy thing where they turn us both into a couple of, you know, we're out trying to drum up because
we're like battling zombies.
Yeah, we're out doing all this insane stuff.
And then every week we go back and we talk about the
zombies. We go on the quest for the Holy Grail and we kill people on the way and do all these valiant things. And we're sitting there with our jaws on the floor in the theater going, dude, we just sat in a basement, man. We just sat in a basement. So now we have to go on a campaign for the next 10 years trying to go, look, this isn't what happened. This isn't what happened. That's after our drunk bender we've had because we're so freaked out about it, right? That's just kind of an idea. That's just to try to get this idea out to people, like what George may be going through and what you're talking about, Mary. Like, this is what scares you the most, is that somebody has taken this name, the man's name, George Lutz, who's been through this situation, and this is coming from someone who was there, you, Mary, okay? They've taken this name of this person, and they have made a film that
sensationalized, completely inaccurate depiction of what went on.
That's truly scary. That can happen in this country.
Yeah, that's what's scary about this horror. That's the horror part of Amityville Horror.
That is the horror part. Yeah. Nowadays,
that they can do this to George.
Now you've gotten to the bone of it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the bone of it is that the whole thing, and we'll talk about the house, and I'll tell you my feelings on it.
Okay.
But right now, I want to say one thing. Okay. I've known the man for 30 years. At the time this happened, they were together just a short period of time. And except for the happenings in the house, they were happy. We lost Kathy, but having known George for over 30 years, I must say this. I admire and I respect him. How many young men, and you can empathize with this, mm-hmm. in their late 20s, early 30s, are going established in a successful business with a house full of expensive and beautiful things, would have left every single material possession they owned behind to protect his wife and his children. He started over with, I knew what he went through with them. He started over with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's worked hard to be what he is, the best at, a good man. He's brave because he was the victim of something he didn't understand, but he was smart enough to distance himself from it. I mean, I live in this world. When I'm not doing this, I'm cooking, cleaning, taking care of my children, grandchildren. I'm ironing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm at the Historic Commission. Or I'm a Democrat fighting for Democratic rights as the representative for my county. I mean, I distance myself in order to be able to work successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the things that happens when this happens is that from the comments from the friends that have known him and that have called me and that have you know, that like this stuff, well, not like it, but are willing to go and see this stuff,
mm-hmm.
here's that they're depicting him as an abusive person. George Lutz is far from that. He's a kind, considerate man who only under the most disturbing circumstances becomes angry.
That's normal.
In this case, he might have every single right to be. If people involved had taken the time to portray the people involved, I mean, to portray the movie properly, mm-hmm. ask questions of the victims, find out the impact that this had on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful view of the unexplained that would have been. Mm-hmm. Whereas yet another movie, loosely based on happenings, can only be viewed as a total disregard for both Kathy's memory, the Lutz children, and George Lutz himself. They have a right to live beyond Amityville.
Yeah, they do. They do. He is a George Lutz, the person who owns the business. He is George Lutz, the person, the father.
Yeah.
There are other you know, things mm-hmm. of George Lutz besides George
Lutz.
The man,
the friend, and this movie is going to make it. Well, this movie depicts him as a homicidal maniac.
Yeah,
you know, possessed by a demon.
Yeah.
And
it's very hard to live that down.
It's going to be. Yeah. He's got quite a job ahead of him now.
And, I mean, like we said before, Tim was on earlier, Mary, and Tim is the webmaster of AmityvilleHorror.com. And one thing that we find we respect and we like so much about what Tim's doing and helping out George is that, yeah, there is a lot of exposure right now. There's going to be a ton of exposure. I know for a fact there is to that website because I went there the other day, and the web server crashed on there because there were so many people accessing the site.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a huge amount of people accessing the site right now. And what they're doing with that site now is putting the accurate documentation up, putting the story from the horse's mouth up there, George himself. They're trying to get the facts that they're going, look, yeah, okay, you're here because you saw the movie. Cool. Thank you for stopping by. But here's what really went down, okay? Before you judge this man for as a homicidal maniac possessed by a demon, Let's tell you what really happened now.
Let's talk about what really, really happened.
Okay. Yes. All right.
I'm sitting in my office in the, school, and Ed calls me, and he calls me and he says, okay, he said, what do you think? And I said, well, I see a white house with a fan window, sit back, and I see water. He said, okay, it's a go. That means that I've clearly picked up something that's secondary to being correct. So he said, okay, let's go. He never tells me where we're going, what we're involved in, who the person's name was,
mm-hmm.
or anything that was involved there. We arrived at some place. It was nighttime, so no, I napped on the way because I had already cleaned a house, taken care of kids, gotten everything done at the school, and paid salaries, and so I was good to go.
Uh-huh.
But I had also just finished, so I rested on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And we never talk. We never talk except about, Laurie and I would talk about the kids, or we'd talk about impersonal things. We arrive at this place, and we went down to, we pull in the car, and at that point in time, Duke University from North Carolina was there, the investigators.
Okay.
And they were in the house, and they had equipment set up, and they were doing whatever they did. And then so we kind of backed off, and they went over and got pizza, but I was tired, and I sat in the car, and I said, I'm going to rest.
Mm-hmm.
So they came back, and then later on in the evening, because we spent the night in the house, whatever was left of it in the house. So
yeah.
Then when I got out of the car, I don't know if any of you gentlemen are Catholic, but I'm Catholic.
Okay.
I went out and I said a rosary. And when I walked around the side of the house, there was a statue of the Blessed Mother, which I saw, but George said was not there.
Hmm.
And
okay.
It had been removed. At that time, he was not Catholic.
Okay.
So it had been removed. But I said the rosary of the Blessed Mother, and then I looked up in the window, and I saw a young woman's face, maybe 16, 17 years old, 18 years old, long brown hair, looking out the window at me, and that's kind of, for me, a trigger that says, that's where I have to go. Mm-hmm. Obviously, somebody's looking for me like I'm looking for something.
Okay.
All right. So then, in the daytime, as morning cleared and we went into the house, it was, Ed says the same thing that he always says to me. They go about their business, and he says, okay, honey, you're on your own, and a young man went with me, tape recording my thoughts. And when we walked in, and this is the thing that people have to remember. When you walk in the house, the first thing I said was, these people are nuts. The house is gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were beautiful things all over the house. The mm-hmm. furniture was gorgeous. The house was wonderful. And I thought to myself, man, maybe these people are, you know, imagining something.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the house is chameleon. It lures you in and lets you see what it wants you to see.
Okay.
And that's the crux of it. When you go in the front door, to the right-hand side is the dining area. To the left-hand side is a living room type of area.
Mm-hmm.
In the back of the living room area is a bar. There was a bar, and underneath the fan window, there's like a little bar room or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, when you go in, you walk down and... the kitchen is in back of the dining room to the right. When you go down the stairs, and that's where I was drawn first. I was drawn down the stairs.
Okay.
All right? Because I always start at the bottom, work my way up. Well, the first thing I said was, this is not the original house. This house is a second house. There was a house here before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was recorded. And then we went down the cellar, and when we got to the cellar, there were clothes. You know, if somebody leaves fast and doesn't do their laundry, clothes piled over there, and there was an odor.
Looks like my house, yeah.
Yeah. Like my son's house. And so I went into the room, and I said, well, I've got to do something. So I put the clothes in the laundry, turned on the washing machine, figure I'll throw them in the dryer. If that's the smell, it's going to disappear with the water.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other order than, and I walked out of the room and I went down, and on the left-hand side was a room where there was where there appeared to me to be, and George said it wasn't there either, a recreation room. Well, I felt nothing there.
Okay.
No more than I felt anything in the laundry room, except the clothes were dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Then in front of me, there was a door. And when I opened the door, later it was recorded as the red room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he opened the door, and when you opened the door, it was an old cellar. And I thought, this was connected to the original house. This is where the original house stayed.
Okay.
And then it was like the old stone cellars with the little windows on top, and it was just a square little room. But there's a rule that I have. When I do time walking or I work psychically, if I'm told you can't go in there or it's not the place for you to be, I don't enter. I just don't go there. Because I'm well protected, and I figure whoever's protecting me telling me not to go there, I'm not going there.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, Mary, I just want to interject for 1 second. That we talk about that on the show a lot. That idea right there comes up a lot. And we tell people that, too. We're like, look, don't worry about if your friends are going to make fun of you or not because you're a scaredy cat. If you got a bad feeling in your gut, don't go in there.
Absolutely.
Don't go in there. Don't put yourself through something like that just because you have this passion, which we all respect, that you want, you're trying to find something out here.
You want to do this, but
you need to exercise good judgment here, too.
Think.
Yeah, exactly. I just want
to understand better than most that there's a rule that goes with being a psychic investigator or a time walker, and that is when you're in that realm, it's 100% honest. There's no way you can lie in that field, or otherwise you don't get results.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 90% correct because I have never been a psychic liar.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt the need to be. I'll research whatever I find. I research, I document, I go back and research again, I document again, until I have the facts, because it's important for me to know that what I've found is accurate or correct. Because if I'm going to do another case, I have to know that.
Well, that's how you learn, too.
Sure. 47 years later, I'm still the same person that I was. I've never gone against the feeling, because I know that, like, I'm just this kind of person that really needs that kind of protection. It needs it. But the red room, there was also another thing that impacted, and that was that it was a void. And you're familiar with the term a time warp, a time zone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a place where energy comes in and flows out, flows out and comes in.
Right. They call that vortex now or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is a vortex, but yeah. It's time vortex.
Okay.
Where it's captured all of mostly trauma. And there's a difference. If it's a good vortex, you can feel it. Like Farnsworth House in Pennsylvania, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Absolutely a pure vortex of where people come because they feel safe and secure.
Mm-hmm.
People from time.
Okay.
In this vortex, you can feel a raw danger there, like an implosion there, and it's like a sleeping dragon that's waiting to open its mouth and breathe on you. That you know.
Mm-hmm.
I closed the door and I went upstairs. When you go upstairs again, I was going to go to the upper floor because I wanted to be with the little girl that I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
I figured that's my job, being in this house, and sometimes that's all I'm called for, is one little thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go up to the seven, you go seven steps up, and it's that cotton batting feeling, mm-hmm. where you feel wrapped and pressured, your energy is pressed against.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that that's an indication of something happening in the house that shouldn't be happening.
Okay.
Well, also while I was there, I got the feeling of a young man who was crying and who had made a decision to do something terrible. Right there on that seven steps was, he had made a decision that would have changed his entire life.
Interesting.
Really?
Yes. And
you,
then I got to the top.
And you were vocalizing this on the tape, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Warrens have the tapes. I don't keep tapes if I investigate for somebody else.
Right.
You know, but the Warrens had that. And that, it was the feeling that a young man stood on this step and made a decision that impacted on him for the rest of his life, and it was a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In the top room that they called, it was the little sewing room. I went in and I could hear crying from the outside. Now, I rarely see physical manifestation. I usually hear because my mind is so busy and occupied. So I got the impression of this young girl, and she was crying, and I figured, I'll white light her. I knew it was somebody who had died in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Had on this little brown, like, moo-moo-y dress with the paisley that they used to wear in maybe in the 80s or so, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I white light her, and I said a prayer, and I said, walk into the light, all that you love are there, and then suddenly the room was filled with this warmth and this light, and I knew she had left. I walked out of that house. I walked out of that room, and I began to feel sick to my stomach. I got up to the lower room, bedroom, and I walked. I could hear the young man again,
mm-hmm.
talking to himself, and I knew that whoever the young man was, he had done something terrible. I walked up and into the master bedroom, and I could never really go into that room. At that point in time, there was also a stair that led up to the third floor, and I couldn't go into that room because I just had the feeling that it was something that would nullify anything further that I could do in that house. So mm-hmm. I passed. I went into his youngest daughter's room, and it was like a safe haven. And I said to the young man that was with me, I said, I have to lay down. I'm feeling very sick to my stomach. They were downstairs. They were going to do a table seance
mm-hmm.
with Channel 5. And I said to Ed, I said, I have to lay down. I'm sick as a dog. And so I walked in the room, and I started to say, our Father who art in heaven. And I looked outside, and I could see in a semicircle hooded figures around the door. And as I was saying, our Father, they were saying it backwards.
Oh, wow.
And I always go to, Father John has passed away now, but I always would go to him and get holy water to take with me. And he said, I don't like you going there. For some reason, I just don't want you to go there, but if you've got to go, you got to go. And he gave me his cross and a little thing with holy water.
Mm.
I took the holy water and I went like this, and I said, get thee behind me, Satan. And I went like that, and 5 minutes passed, there was nothing after that. And then 5 minutes passed, and Ed said, what the heck did you do? He said, everything stopped.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to go out of the house. Now, I did go back. They said that I never came back, but I did come back. I came back the following day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the following day we did come back. And I sat with the things, and we found out that there was a second house, but the first house was moved. It belonged to it was the original building, and that site had been moved somewhere in town, and then this house had been built on it.
On the foundation, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Well, now this is what you went through, though. I mean, you went in there and did your thing, more or less. These are the experiences that you had. And it sounds like something, I mean, for me.
Did they ever Ooh. Find out anything about a home for, I don't know, runaway Indians? Or what was that about
yeah.
in the movie?
I did do research.
Okay.
I did some research, but Amityville closed the library to me. I couldn't get into their records. But I did go because I thought, when I looked out, and I thought the water was their pool.
Mm-hmm.
But in back of the house, there's a river of water.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know,
yep.
I didn't know that until it's sun up.
Right.
I had seen a black boat coming up with, you know, where a woman's pressed against the side and the hair is flowing and the old boats that they used to have.
Yep, yep.
I saw a boat like that, and I knew that somebody from Rhode Island had come into this Long Island, and it wasn't called that at the time. There was another name, but I can't think of it. And I knew that he had probably brought either a slave
mm-hmm.
or a woman that was a Caribbean
mm-hmm.
into that house. And that house, she was the one that was like people disassociated with her. And the anger, a lot of the anger that started to build in those 1700s was there. There was also an Indian village there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At the base of the, I guess, when before the house was built, there was acreage, and then you could look down on the water and down, like, if you're standing on the, looking, and your right is one way, down to the left along the water, there used to be an Indian village.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there could have been a grave site there. Who knows? You know, well, that's used for a lot of the anomaly of the Voitrex occurs.
That sounds like, you know, some normal history of a plot of land, but the history of this particular plot of land, according to this more
new film,
yeah. The one that they say is more accurate, is that I agree.
Now we're back on the rare and the unusual.
But they're saying that it was a place where a father or a monk or something started a home for Indians to, you know, Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
To stay, but then he would torture them in what would have been the Red Room.
Yeah.
So when you go into this Red Room in this particular movie,
yeah.
It's actually this long, dank hallway with, like, what, jail cells? I don't know.
Yeah, it was very, I mean, the demons and the people that were getting murdered in George Lutz's head in this film, they have an impeccable sense of time from what I saw, because as George walked down the hall, they jump right out right next to him as he was
right.
walking along, scare him half to death.
The Red Room was not a room, it was a hallway.
It was a hallway and with a door with light coming out of the edges of the door at the
and
end
then
of the
when
room.
You open up the door at the end of the hallway, there was this evil priest or evil
yeah.
monk or whatever he was who started this home.
Yeah.
So it was about this movie, I guess, in the end was about a bizarre
some guy who tortured people,
evil torturer guy.
Yeah. Well, they have to go back and. See, they're not a member of the Historic Society, so they don't know how to get records.
Yeah.
I do. And
but they do know how to write works of fiction, that's for sure.
Hey, I were going to write it, I would do that. I mean, you know, I write, if I was going to write a horror story, why not a monk that was going to take poor innocents that were that weren't knowledgeable about anything and torture them? I guess that plays it. But I've been in the area of the Red Room, and let me tell you, there is no such thing. The old house didn't have a hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was the original 1600, 1700 site. That was built originally on that land. It was part of there were, I think, three farms connected, mm-hmm. and then a lower farm. So, I mean, I've done my homework. They haven't done theirs.
Obviously.
It's horribly unfortunate.
If you were going to write a movie, and it was a fantastic, like, you know, plot at the end, you know, with the crazy monk guy, you know, killing
poking his head out the window. Hey,
and scaring people a little bit, you know, but great, great, great movie, but not the Amityville Horror.
Well, I'm sitting here right now talking to Mary.
Yes.
I'm listening, we're listening to you talk, Mary, and you're telling us what you went through, what you did. Back then.
And that sounds like an investigation of a family who was victimized by things that unseen things that they didn't know how to control, how to be around, how to do anything. They were confused. They were driven out of their home. I mean, that's what you're describing to us.
Yeah,
you're describing an investigation of this paranormal event, and it sounds and the history and the. You know, that what you're describing sounds very real, very like what I'm accustomed to.
Yeah,
well, you're investigators. You know that circumstances and situations like that occur to victims.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy walked in there. She was a sweet, soft, sensitive young woman, just as loving and as adorable as you could possibly, a little teeny thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just as beautiful as you could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
And she walked in and so sensitized and so giving and so emotionally in tune with love and things that house just latched onto her and just like an energy vampire started just to affect her.
Mm-hmm.
The children the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to victimize somebody, where do you start first? If you can't get to the parents, who do you go to first?
The children.
Right. Start with the ones who don't have all the protections built up.
Yeah. Right. And also they're at an age where they're open.
And they've got a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of power, mm-hmm. of course. But, I mean, these children, and to be very honest with you, these children were exposed to things that they shouldn't have been exposed to. And in George recognizing that and realizing that and being the kind of a man that he is, he said, I don't care about anything. My kids are more important than anything. And those were his words. Mm-hmm. I'm getting the heck out of here. I'm listening to everybody. I'm going. I don't care about that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's stuff. Now, his father and his grandfather before him were a surveying company. George's family were in that town, in that county, since the early 1700s. His grandfather was a surveyor with the bridges in New York City and mm-hmm. with the Empire State Building and some of the larger buildings with the tunnels that were built there. So, I mean, you're talking about a very respectable firm and a very and he sold it for absolutely nothing, enough money to get him on the road and going.
To get him out of that house, basically.
Absolutely. They fled. The dining room table had stuff on it. We had to clear it in order to have the sale. We did housework before we did our thing.
That's so interesting because we've been I'm not going to name any more names here, but I mean we've been to a house like that.
Yeah, we've been to a house like that.
We've been to a house, not the Amityville house.
No, not
we've
that.
We've been
one.
To a different house though, with the same circumstances. The same, where I mean, literally, we always use this as an earmark for it, is that there's still a towel hanging on the shower rack.
Yeah, a towel was drying on the shower rack for 23 years.
Yeah, still sitting there. The thing that I've been thinking about, you're telling us all this stuff concerning what you did in the house, and I'm thinking about the movie I watched this afternoon, and I'm like, okay, drama, horror, death, gore, blood, whatever, all kinds of stuff flying around the screen, and I'm listening to what you have to say, Mary, and I'm going, geez. This would make for a pretty good documentary film or film itself. What you had to go through as an investigator walking through this home. I'm just thinking about, okay, I'm a movie industry executive sitting on my 50th floor office looking down, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a film on the Amityville Horror again. I need to get in contact with some people. Let's get some ideas here. Let's talk to some people. Let's talk to Mary. Let's see what Mary has to say. And Mary, you explain this to him. This... What would be going through your mind at the time, I couldn't even imagine having to deal with that myself. So I'm not as psychically in tune as you are, obviously. I'm just thinking, why wouldn't they talk to someone like yourself? Just if it was just you, why wouldn't they talk to someone like you and go, you know, okay, you were one of the original people that came through the house. What happened? Tell us what happened. And it don't make any sense to me why they would do what they've done with this film.
Well, you can't, I mean, Mary's way
it
too
makes
nice
money.
To be...
Don't
yeah,
you understand
exactly,
that
exactly.
If you're going to improvise and you're going to take a film that already was successful and because it had shock value, why would you, if you're investing your money, not make it three times as shocking?
Yeah,
well, that's what they definitely did.
That's what it comes down to. We know.
I said in the beginning, and I've said it for 30 years, if they had taken the situation as it occurred exactly, that would have been so much more interesting because people would have learned not only about what happened in Amityville, but they would have learned what happened in some places, and it would explain to them. I'm a teacher. If you can get somebody to focus on reality and something that's unexplained can be explained properly, and then you can accept it. Then you can accept that evil exists.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and to me, that is the true horror right there.
Yes,
because that is reality. That
fascinated is by it, but they don't want to. They don't want to know the truth about it.
Mm-mm. No, and I mean, some people. I mean, there are people out there, and there's nothing wrong with this. Some people will go to see this film, and they just want to go to see a scary movie. They want to step out of reality for 90 minutes. They want to forget about the day job and all the things they have to do in life. They just want to step away and enjoy themselves for 90 minutes. And that's all they want out of this film.
Yep. Stephen King, he's made a career of making films like this.
Yeah, and that's there's nothing wrong with that. I do it too. I love those. But I'm sorry.
My kids love his movies. I mean, I love movies. I don't think there's one thing wrong with the industry except you get on occasion somebody that takes something out of context when they could have done it in such a way that it would have been. If they did the true story of the Amityville Horror, it would have been so phenomenally successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a cult classic for years because now not only are you doing something and making a movie that's accurate, but you're teaching people something.
Yeah.
You're giving them... It's more frightening to understand that a house is a chameleon and can draw you in. It's more frightening to understand that the house is a sleeping giant, and people don't understand. Time is not as we know it. Maybe it could be 5 years, 10 years, 50 years. Time, that house is sleeping. When it wakes up, something bad will happen again.
No.
Only because it's inured into the energy of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard all kinds of stuff, obviously, Mary, about this the Amityville house. You know,
oh, sure.
And I'm not asking for, hey, bottom line, Mary, I want you to tell me the truth and the truth only, okay? I'm not going to do that to you. I'm not going to put you on the spot today. But as far as your opinion goes...
And I will.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's even better.
Well, no, as far as your opinion goes, I mean, you've been through this house, you went through this, you explained this to us in depth. Thank you for doing that, too. This is really enlightening here, too.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you... You've said that time is not as we know it, as far as this house is concerned. It's a sleeping giant. I mean, to put that into other terms, like, what do you think is going on, kind of, in this house? I mean, we have our ideas, and there's a lot of ideas. I'd like to hear what your idea is about this house.
Okay, let me explain first that time, past, present, and future, it surrounds you.
Okay.
You can... That's what makes me a good time walker, because I slow myself down enough to step into time and see it as it is. I am good at archaeological digs, finding old houses, getting true facts about a house that we can then go into libraries and research areas and find. I'm good at that because time is constantly in motion, and yet it's totally still.
Mm-hmm.
So that a void track is just that. It's a black hole, like a black hole in space. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that black hole can just stay there and suck energy for, millions of years?
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you'll have something happen within that black hole.
Mm-hmm.
It expands and it contracts, and something explodes in an area around it because the energy mass is sent out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a blue star, or you have a red star, or you have a yellow star that's mm-hmm. impacted by a surge of energy. From where? Who knows where? Probably a black hole.
Right.
You know, but I mean, I really think that this house has got this, it just keeps drawing, if it has nothing to draw against, if the people in there are people that are noncommittal, don't think about anything about this, don't pay any attention to the house, they'll be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
The
void trestis is open, but it's closed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then, since this is 2005, maybe it sleeps until 2055. And then suddenly it opens one eye and it says, oh, I sense somebody came in here that I can get to.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's going to start to work again. I knew nothing about the Feos being in there, but I can well understand how the house could impact on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my feelings with that is that he's been having problems with his family for weeks and months beforehand. His father probably laid down the law to him, and that's what triggered it. The fact that the house will work with you if you're negative. Will work with you and give you more energy, more things to draw on. Will draw you in more. Now, look at Kathy. Kathy looked in the mirror when she was in that house, and she saw an old woman. When she died of a breathing disease. And she looked 30 years older than her actual age.
Hmm.
So she saw the older woman even before death.
Wow.
I mean, you know, now is that in itself is like a little piece of information that tells you how bad that house really is.
Mm-hmm.
It can influence the person's mind.
Is there a way to close off that vortex or move it or do anything to affect it? Or is it just there?
In my opinion, I mean, you had one of the best priests go in there, Father Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was not only knowledgeable, he was skilled. You know, I worked for the Diocese as an investigator. And I know there are priests in there that have extremely good abilities to deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
But would blessing the house do anything? No. That's a void trek. A void trek is a pit.
Mm-hmm.
A pit of energy. You can walk over it. You can be in that room, and it appears as though it's not there, but it's underneath you.
So it isn't really conscious, what we're saying. It isn't a conscious being that says, boy, I don't like blessings very much. I'm going to go away. It just is.
Void trusts are a black hole. It's
right.
Probably a part of how the energy of the Earth is constructed.
I mean, we can't go out in space on a shuttle and go, okay, there's a black hole right there, priest. I want you to bless it so it goes away.
Bless it away.
It's more or less the same thing.
It just is.
It just
now
is.
He's stuck in.
Yeah. So, Mary, we have less.
My father.
Mary, we have less than a minute.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I'd like to go
all night long.
Do you know, not only does Mary do, you know, this amazing stuff that she's done, but you're also very interested in UFOs as well, right?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Mary, I want to talk to you. I want to do some more stuff, because I think we could talk about UFOs. We could talk about just all kinds of stuff. So I would love to keep in contact with you.
Oh, yeah, and you know what I would love to do is to have you hear about my first physical manifestation since I was 12 at the Farnsworth House, and that in itself is a show.
Oh, let's keep in contact through email.
Definitely.
Okay?
Righty, dear.
We really need to thank you for coming on such short notice, Mary.
Thank you so very much.
It was a real pleasure to have you on.
And a pleasure.
We'll talk very soon.
We'll keep in touch.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
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 Man, I...
Absolutely fascinating.
I don't know. I'm not taking anything away from Georgia. If we were to have Georgia on the show,
they could put a camera in front of Mary.
Yeah.
And talk with her for 2 hours and sell tickets for that. I'm telling you, because she is fascinating.
There was a few people that tried to get through to talk to us.
We were trying to call in.
We apologize. We do it. We fly by the seats, by the edge of our seat here. And we when we're doing this show, you don't see all the goofing that goes on between Doug, myself, and Will, and Bonnie, or Chris, who's here today.
Chris was going ape.
Chris was he was actually plastered to the ceiling.
Yes,
he was
at one point. Yeah.
But we were planning on maybe only going a half an hour with Mary, and then the last half an hour we're going to try to talk to a few people.
That's what we wanted to do. But we blew right through the break.
We do the sign always. We go, roll our hand and go, just keep going.
Because she was fascinating, and she had so much information, and that's the real information, folks. So I don't know about this movie. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Other than, you know,
we still want your opinion. I would love to see some emails. Here's something. I don't want to put anybody on the spot again, but we might want to do maybe one of those little famous bonus things, possibly.
Oh, a bonus.
I'm not going to say anything. We're going to do anything yet. We'll discuss that, because I really, really, really want to hear from some other people.
Right.
And there's some other people that we're calling in that want to
talk
about this.
Within a week or so, pretty much everybody who's going to go see the movie will have seen it.
We'll talk about this.
So that might be a good
thing.
We'll
have a show. We'll just have do our Wednesday night thing. We come over here and hang out. Maybe we'll do one of these and have you guys call and tell us about this. I mean,
what do you think of this movie?
What do you think of this movie?
What have you heard? What are the myths surrounding the story?
Exactly.
We could get some folks from AmityvilleTruth.com, perhaps, about that. So anyway, I'll tell you what.
Let's
with that, we've got to close the show, because we've got to make way for W Paranormal coming up next on Pioneer.
I'm going home tonight, and I'm listening to all it. Man, I haven't had a day off on Sunday in so long, and I'm so excited to get the hell out of here and go home.
You can be at home.
So I can be at home, and I'm going to listen to all my favorite. I'm going to listen to W Paranormal.
Yep.
I'm going to listen to Ground Zero, my man.
Oh,
10
Clyde
years.
Lewis. Ground
Clyde
Zero.
Lewis. Man.
Yep.
Hi, Clyde. I can't wait to get home. But guys, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks for participating, Jim and Mary.
Yeah, thanks for coming on such short notice.
And unknown caller. thank you so very much. And we will be back again next Sunday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
Thanks for listening.
We're out of here, man.
Yes, we're going. Ha.